Hi, my name's John Ormond. I'm a program manager in the Azure Networking Engineering team. I focus mostly on ExpressRoute and enterprise scenarios, and today I would like to talk about VNet, so I could do a deep dive, and also a hybrid network overview. This course was originally designed to be in about an hour session, so I'll be speeding it up and hopefully keeping it to about 30 minutes. So we talked in the overview session about virtual networks, and now let's look at them a little bit deeper. In Azure, you can create constructs very similar to an on-premise network, and you can segregate your networks out so that you can have load balancers and a web tier, a back-end tier with either database or logic. You can use public address space, private address space, use our DNS, use your own DNS, a lot of different options that you can do to create your virtual network. One of the key features that we talked about in the overview session was the idea that these networks are isolated. So how does isolation work? Everything in Azure is based on a physical network. So there is, at the top part of this slide, a physical network, the typical mesh network of switches and routers in the data center itself. And then each physical machine has a virtual switch. So in the hypervisor layer, there's a virtual switch that is aware of certain things as told to it by the SDN controller, the little gear at the bottom of the slide. And as a result, machines are logically placed into their own virtual network. So for instance, if VM1 is on the red network there, wants to talk to VM3, it will talk to the virtual switch first, and the virtual switch will check with the controller to see what's allowed and what's not allowed. And it will basically encapsulate that traffic, put it on the physical network, and send it over to that other physical server where that virtual switch will see that incoming traffic. It will go talk with the SDN controller and say, hey, is this allowed? And it will say, oh yeah, that's part of that network. And then it will allow that traffic to go up to VM3. So if VM1 tried to talk to VM2, it would not be allowed because that virtual switch would not be authorized by the SDN controller to allow those networks to talk. So it would say, no, you guys are on different networks, traffic's not allowed, I'm not even going to let this packet up. So VM2 would never even know that VM1 was trying to talk to it. So even though they're all on the same physical network, this isolation occurs by the SDN controller and the vSwitches working together to make sure that only red network traffic goes to machines on the red network, and blue or green network traffic goes to the green network. There's also the Azure Fabric itself, where you're doing the REST commands, and this is how you would make changes to the SDN controller. So let's say that you wanted network A and network B to be able to talk to each other. You could make a REST call to the Azure network or use the portal to make a change, and that would then tell the SDN controller that it is okay for those to talk to each other. And in that case, when the virtual switch checked in with the SDN controller, it would say, yes, it's okay for VM1 to talk to VM2. So there are ways to make everything talk or to isolate, and this is conceptually, it works very differently under the covers, but at a conceptual level, this is an accurate view of how things are being isolated within Azure. Once a virtual switch checks in with the SDN controller, it caches that information. So it knows that VM1's on the red network and that the red network can talk to VM2 or VM3 on the green or the other red network, or on the red network. That's cached at that vSwitch. And every so often, usually within 15, 30 seconds, somewhere like that, that will expire and it will check in with the SDN controller. But what that means is that sometimes you can make a change to, say, a network security group that may take a few seconds to actually be felt on the network itself until that cache and the virtual switch expire. So that's always good to know. If you make an NSG change and you don't see it change instantly, you're probably waiting for that virtual switch cache to expire. And again, that usually happens within 15 to 30 seconds at the most. If we look at a VNet in detail, this is the template of a virtual network. So you've got the concept of address prefixes. These are in CIDR notation. I don't know if you've ever seen this before, but it's basically if you see an IP address with a slash and a number after it, that's called a CIDR prefix. And that basically stands for a range of IP addresses. If you'd like to know more about CIDR, and if you're going to work with networks, you definitely should. Wikipedia, one of my favorite sources of information. You can look up CIDR on Wikipedia and get a better understanding of what that means. In the example here, we say 192.168.0.1 through 192.168.0/254. That can be represented as 192.168.0.0/24, and that is basically shorthand for all of those addresses. So using this prefix notation, we can define inside the template what address spaces we want to use and what subnets are going to be present in this virtual network. So this is basically all there really is to a virtual network. Once we define this in Azure, it gets instantiated with these addresses. For Azure, we can use what's called private address space or public address space. But because the VNet is isolated by default, we always treat it as if it was private space. The most common examples of private, when I say private address space, is the 10 dot. So 10.0, pretty much anything after that. Anything that starts with 10 is considered private. And for those who work with networking, RFC 1918 space, that is not allowed to be routed on the internet. So a lot of companies will use that internally because that can't leak out or in between the internet. There has to be some sort of a boundary or a NAT or a firewall or something protecting the internal corporate 10-dot space from the internet. So a lot of times at corporations, you'll see 10-dot space. Also, 192.168 is also another private range. You'll see this quite often on home networking gear. There's also a 172.16/12 that's also private. Those are the three private address spaces. Those are what we primarily use in Azure virtual networks. But if a customer has a public address space, let's say that it starts with 151, they can use that in their virtual network. However, we will treat it as private. So we will never leak that 151 address out onto the internet. The customers won't be able to use that on the internet, only internally on this private network. So in most cases, because IPv4 addresses are fairly dear, they're expensive and hard to get, we generally recommend, and most people will always use, the 10-dot space for their virtual private networks. If you look on premise at Microsoft's network internally, we use that a lot as well, the 10-dot space. So let's look at security to expose the network features here. I find that this is a really good way to demonstrate a lot of the capabilities of the network by using security as a lens. So the first concept I want to talk about is the DMZ, or demilitarized zone, also called a boundary network. And this is where your internal network meets an intermediary network or the internet itself. So you don't want to have your corporate network just open to the internet, right? The internet can be a dangerous place. So this is how we protect our corporate network. So this is how we get to in and out of the internet. It protects our back-end network. It gives us a place, it's a bottleneck or a constraint point to apply security policy and to do inspection and auditing. So there are many ways to configure a DMZ, and it really depends on what the customer is really trying to implement. So when we look at just a normal corporate network, you'll see the protected network on the left side, kind of a middle DMZ. That's where the protected stuff or the boundary is. And then on the right-hand side, we've got the internet or branch offices or things that are outside of our company. And the first thing we want to do is that lock icon is a little firewall. And so the firewall is going to look at this traffic, and it's only going to allow through certain things. So if I know I've got my web servers in the DMZ, I'm only going to allow that IP for those web servers and the specific port. So if it's, let's say, HTTP or an HTML page, I'm only going to allow port 80 through. Everything else is going to be closed, unless I have other resources that need to talk. But if we just say that this is just for my web servers, I'm going to allow only port 80. So that firewall is going to block everything else. The internet is constantly scanning. Everybody is being scanned all the time on the internet. So it's really important to only expose what is needed, just the barest minimum. So in this case, I'm going to expose just my port 80. And so that's going to be allowed into get to my web servers and talk back out through that firewall on that port 80. Now, if that web server has data back on my on my internal backend network, let's say a SQL server, then I've got another firewall on the other side of the DMZ that is protecting my backend network. And let's say that that firewall, it doesn't allow port 80. It only allows, say, port 1433 for SQL. And so only a SQL call can get through that firewall to get back to the SQL server. So if a hacker is actually going to try and get into my backend network, they've got to figure out how to get through on just port 80 and hack my web server, and then using just port 1433, get through to my backend network. Because services only listen on the service or on the port that they're assigned, it can be very difficult to work your way through varying levels. And generally, especially for large or medium to large corporations, there's going to be much more than just the firewall, right? There's going to be intrusion detection, data loss prevention, NATs, SNATs, all sorts of different technologies. And you want to have varying policies at every boundary. You don't want the same hack to work on the front edge that would work on the back edge, because then it's going to be very easy for a hacker to go through each of the doors that you've put to block that bad traffic. So it's really important to think about what type of policy, how to restrict the attack surfaces as much as possible. But in the case of a VPN user, like you've actually got a user or a branch office out on the internet that you do want to get to those backend resources, that's where you may want to have something like a VPN connection that goes through that DMZ and actually lands on the protected network on the backend side. Now again, you're going to want to have a lot of different mechanisms of security to do that. This has been done for years, since the internet was born, to protect corporations. So the question becomes, well, how do we do this in Azure? Can we do this in Azure? The answer is yes. Every week, it seems, we're adding more and more features to get more and more capabilities into Azure to allow very similar kinds of constructs that we've had in the physical on-prem world to get into the cloud and between in the hybrid connectivity. So native to Azure, the very first thing, as I like to say, is at network isolation. That is the absolute first stop, right? By default, virtual networks are isolated. The next, we've got network security groups, which you can think of like an ACL or an access control list. This is allow or deny. Do I want traffic to come in or leave my virtual network? Next is the user-defined routing, UDR. And this basically says you can go where you're going, but first I want you to check in at this other location, usually a firewall, load balancer, some sort of other appliance, which brings me to the last bullet, network virtual appliance. We've got a very rich and growing very fast, partner ecosystem in the Azure Marketplace where you can add network appliances from very common, well-known network vendors. So, for instance, Big IP by F5 is a virtual appliance. So many companies use these devices to do load balancing in their on-prem data center. We have virtual appliances now that we can actually install in a network in Azure, and it runs and looks just like the on-prem version, but it's actually running on a virtual machine in Azure. So a huge benefit of that, I know this happened internally with our own internal IT department. We use F5 internally, and we use F5 in the cloud, we can use the same management portal. Our ops teams didn't have to be retrained. They had that continuity of experience between on-prem and the cloud that really takes advantage of having the same vendor producing the same devices, both in the physical on-prem world and in the virtual world. Another really cool thing is a lot of the management consoles that you use. So if you wanted to use, say, an ASA firewall, you could apply network policy to your firewalls if you used ASA on-prem and in the cloud using one management portal to deploy it to both sets of routers, your physical firewalls and your virtual firewalls, as long as they're using the same vendor that uses the same management client. So a lot of advantages to using network virtual appliances. You can also do a lot more with a virtual appliance, right? These are folks that have been doing that small niche core competency for many years and have lots of rich features that you may not find in the more standard native Azure functionality. So I usually direct folks to use what's native in Azure first and foremost. It's going to be a less expensive way to do things. But if you need those advanced capabilities that you would get from a vendor that's specialized in that area, then going the network virtual appliance route is definitely a good way to get those additional features. The best part is these are all the Lego blocks that you can build to meet your exact security requirements. So looking at your on-prem capabilities, we can replicate most of those capabilities. It may look different, but the same capability is achievable in Azure Virtual Networks. So if we look at how these different things work together, this is how a packet gets into Azure from the internet. And this is going from the internet on the right-hand side. The very first thing that happens is it has to get past DDoS. This is the distributed denial of service attack. This protects the Azure platform. It's not really for a specific instance in Azure. This is protecting all of Azure. It also protects all of Xbox and Bing and Office. This is really protecting Microsoft's global network. If it sees inbound traffic, it doesn't kill the actual Azure deployment or the endpoint that's going there. It actually kills the traffic at its source. So if the hallmark of a DDoS attack is many attacks coming from many different locations, it's distributed in nature by the definition, and it will see those traffic patterns coming in from our internet connection in Hong Kong and our internet connection in New York and our internet connection in London. And let's say all three of those attack vectors are hitting our data center in San Antonio, southern US. It doesn't stop it in southern US. It actually goes back to the source and it says, in Hong Kong, this flow, I'm filtering you. I'm not killing you, but I'm filtering you. In New York, that specific flow, I'm filtering you. And so because we don't null or black hole that traffic, and we don't do it at the attacked point, we do it at the source, at least the source on our network, we're able to keep that endpoint, that service, your service, up and running, and 99% of the time, you don't even know that you're under attack. The DDoS attacks are happening all the time. Normally, they're happening to Azure services, but because of this DDoS protection that's in place, it's a non-event. So since this is just one packet for this example for this slide, that one packet is going to be able to go through the DDoS just fine because it's a good packet. Because virtual networks are isolated by default, as I say over and over again, isolated by default, that packet can't get in unless we open up an endpoint or a public IP or a load balancer endpoint or something that goes out on the internet that says, hey, I'm here. And I'm going to transport you into that virtual network. So that packet goes to the public endpoint and then it goes to the virtual network. Now, once it gets to the virtual network, it's met by network security groups or NSGs. This is allow or deny. So this is a web packet going to my web server. So I've got an NSG rule that says allow port 80 to my web server. So that's going to be allowed. So my packet then is allowed to go to the next hop, which may or may not be user-defined routing, which may say, hey, you can go to that IIS server, but first I need you to stop by the firewall to make sure that you're cool. So user-defined routing will say your next stop is that network virtual appliance. The firewall will say, oh, you're a packet that's destined for the web server. You're on port 80. You're going to the right IP address. You're not on any denied list or whatever that virtual appliance is checking or looking for to identify bad traffic. If it's got virus scanning or anything like that, it'll look for signatures or reputation scores. There's a lot of different appliances that will check many different things. And if it passes all that, then it will say you're good to go. And now you're actually at your IIS server. Now the IIS will go in there, it will look at this request, it will respond, and that outbound traffic is going to go through almost, it won't go through DDoS, but it will go through all the other points on the way out of your network. So by the time it goes through all that, it's most likely a good packet. And by the time it gets out, it's most likely valid traffic outbound. And it gives you many different points to put security policy and inspect your traffic and make sure that just the right traffic is entering and leaving your network. This is to the internet, but this is also between virtual networks. You can apply a lot of the same techniques to get between virtual networks in Azure. So it allows you to set up very robust security architectures within the networks in Azure. And I'll show you a few here. So what this looks like if we take a corporate network, an Azure virtual network and the internet, we can put that DMZ on the right-hand side with firewalls, load balancers, IDS, virtual appliances, whatever it is, make the traffic go through that to hit our front-end subnet. And then between our front-end subnet in Azure and our back-end subnet in Azure, we can have, say, a network security group controlling just certain amounts of traffic. And then back to our on-premise network, we could have a hybrid connection. And the cool thing about a hybrid connection is part of it's on-prem, part of it's in the cloud, so you could put security devices in Azure or use the ones you already have on-prem. So you can see there's many boundaries in this virtual network example, and it uses Azure and it uses the corporate network. So looking at just in Azure, this is more simple than you would ever actually want to use, but it's a good description of something that you could do. You'd obviously want it to be more complex for a production scenario. This is using network security groups, and I'll walk through the top down how packets come in. So if you've got the internet and you've got a network virtual appliance, let's say a firewall, it has a public IP address out on the internet. So when traffic hits acme.com, whatever your website is, it's going to hit that IP address that's public. That's going to get translated down to 10.0.1.4, the virtual appliance. And it's going to look at that, and it's going to say, are you valid? And if it says you're okay, it's going to look at where you want to go and say, oh, this is web traffic. I'm going to send you to my web server, 10.0.1.5. The web server will respond. Now, in this case, because it's a network security group and we're not using user-defined routing, that web server is going to talk directly to the internet. It's not going to go back out through the virtual appliance. So it's one-way inspection in this model. The next model I'll show you, we'll do bi-directional. So right now, this is only looking at inbound traffic. So if that web server wants to go to piratebay.com, it's going to go straight to piratebay.com, and you're not going to see that at the firewall. On the next example, I'll show you how to stop that. But for this example, the web server then wants to talk to the back-end network. That's where the NSGs come into play. And the network security group says that front-end traffic is allowed from the web server only to App Server 1, but not to App Server 2. So if the web server got hacked and tried to talk to App Server 2, the NSG would say, nope, that's not allowed. Now, if it wanted to talk to App Server 1, it would only allow it, let's say that we only allowed SQL traffic, it would allow traffic on port 1433, but only on that port. However, because we don't have user-defined routing, it's not going to go through your firewall, so you wouldn't necessarily see that explicitly. So let's look at a little more complex example where we bring in user-defined routing and we have a lot more control over our traffic. So here, we're still using network security groups because that allow and denies flow, but here, the web server, still 10.0.1.4, if it wants to talk out to the internet, that user-defined routing, that little paper with a table icon on it, it's going to say, fine, you can go to piratebay.com, that's fine, but first, before you go there, go to 10.0.0.4, which just happens to be our firewall. Now, the firewall is going to get that packet and say, oh, you want to go to piratebay.com? That's not on my allowed list. I'm not going to allow that. I'm going to end this conversation right now. So that web server can't talk out based on the firewall rules that are allowed. Now, if it's going to act, let's say OpenGov or OpenData.gov to get to some open source data feed, it's going to go to that routing table and say, I want to go to OpenData.gov. Routing table is going to say, sure, no problem, but first go to 10.0.0.4, which is the firewall. The firewall is going to say, oh, I've got an allow rule for that website. Please proceed, and it will forward the traffic on to OpenData.gov, and that traffic will be allowed. Same thing with the inbound traffic. Now, the difference here is when that web server wants to talk to the back-end web server, we can actually add richer policies than just the allow-deny that we have with the NSG. Because even with intra traffic if you set the rules up properly. When the front end wants to talk to the back end, the web server says, I want to talk to app server 2 on remote desktop protocol. That routing table will say, sure, no problem, but first, before you go there, let's go to 10.0.0.4, and it will go to the firewall. The firewall will look at that and say, app server 2 is not on the allow list, and remote desktop protocol is definitely not on the allow list. I don't know what's going on here, but that is denied. So that can be denied. Now, if it was SQL, it will have the allow rules that would allow it to go in there. So here, you've got not only the NSG rule stopping things, but you also have the firewall and user-defined routing working together. So this is where we start to get layers of defense, which you always want to have multiple layers and policy points in your network security to make sure that, again, if a hacker breaks through one door, that it's not easy for them to go through other doors. Another nice thing about this design is that traffic going from one zone to another zone is going through the virtual appliance, which means you've got an easy audit point. So if you are under HIPAA, PCI, any of the other compliance things out there, this is a way for you to get really rich auditing and logs from the virtual appliance, hopefully in a format that you already use on-prem if you're using the same type of hardware that you have virtualized as you do on-prem in the physical world. So another good use for virtual appliances is that auditing and logging. We do native logging and native logging in Azure, and there are things with OMS that you can do auditing with, but it is fairly rudimentary. So if you need richer features, then you go to that virtual appliance and you can get the same thing that you get with your on-prem stuff. So this is a way to protect inbound traffic and outbound traffic in the virtual network in Azure. I'll go through this fairly quickly. With NSGs and UDRs, there's fairly similar. This is looking at PowerShell, and this is classic PowerShell, not the new stuff, ARM. But basically, you create, in this case, a route table. You add routes to that table, and then you associate that table with different subnets. So the three steps are basically the same with both. More information on Azure.com. I also have a best practice for network security that is on Azure.com under Documents Best Practice Network Security that has these details in greater with more information. So hybrid networks. A hybrid network provides a back-end connection. So this is looking at that first example. And in this case, we've got an express route connection coming into a virtual gateway that comes into the back-end network of our a virtual network in Azure. And this is a way that you can separate your private internal conversations with your public internet conversations. And there are many options on how you can do this hybrid network connection. And let's talk about some of those ways. We'll go into express route connectivity in much greater detail in coming sessions, but just at a high level, I want to cover all of the different ways that you can get into your Azure resources. This is focused primarily on IaaS private networks. Now, the first option is internet connectivity. So if you have a single VM with an IP open for a remote desktop protocol, you can remote desktop to that machine over the internet from anywhere, pretty straightforward. Not the most secure way to connect, but as just the basic bare bones connectivity, you can always use the internet to get in and out of your machines. Stepping that up, there's point to site. This is really good for developers, proof of concepts, proof of technology type deployments. This is where you've got a single machine. This is similar to like if you VPN into your corporate, into your work network, where you've got a laptop that's VPNing into that network in Azure, and it's that private little network in Azure that you've created. This is a way for your laptop to connect directly to it and be a part of that network. Again, best for developers and very, very small scale use. The next is the site-to-site VPN. This is where we start to get into enterprise usage scenarios. This is where we have a router on the customer on-premise side that has a permanent VPN connection maintained to either a virtual appliance or an Azure virtual gateway in the private network in Azure. And this is a state that is maintained constantly between the on-prem router and the gateway in Azure. The cool thing about this, the users don't have to do anything. If they're on the corporate network, they can follow this path up to the servers in Azure. So it appears as if they're just on the corporate network. It's an extending of your corporate network. Now, with site-to-site VPN, this uses IPsec, so that encryption mandates an overhead of doing that encryption and decryption, which that overhead on the Azure Gateway side has a performance impacting limit. So we see around 200 megabits per second on the largest gateway is about the max throughput that we can get there. And that's based on latency. There's a lot of factors that will degrade that. So 200 megabits per second is the theoretical limit. Usually you'll get somewhere close to that, but not quite that. Again, depending on latency. And so as a result, we see that being good for the small and into the medium business. But as soon as we start to get to larger workloads, more users, more demand on the network, that's where ExpressRoute comes into play. With ExpressRoute, everything's built on private networks. So this doesn't use the internet, so it is not encrypted. It is encapsulated, and it is on private networks. So your traffic isn't necessarily commingled with other tenants. It is a private network connection. It's just non-encrypted, and it's not on the internet. So in this case, you will use a service provider like Orange or AT&T or Verizon to provide that connectivity to Microsoft. So you'll ride their network in an isolated fashion to our network, and then in our network, we keep you isolated up to that Azure virtual private network that you've created in your Azure subscription. So this allows private connectivity and greatly increases the bandwidth compared to site-to-site VPN. With Azure Virtual Networking, with ExpressRoute, we can go up to 2 gigabits per second right now. And in the coming months, or actually this month, September 2016, we're releasing an ultra-performance gateway that will get up to 10 gigabits per second on a single ExpressRoute connection. So network to network, you'd be able to do up to 10 gigabits. Again, theoretical limit, latency will degrade that, but that's the theoretical target. So lots of throughput with the ExpressRoute private network connectivity. So very big for network, for large enterprise networks that we see using ExpressRoute. And much greater detail on ExpressRoute and the various options coming up in future sessions. Here are some of the details, the specifications for each of the different options. Again, ExpressRoute really is the enterprise grade option. We use a protocol called BGP, Border Gateway Protocol, which is how the internet works, that allows a dynamic exchange of routes. It is active-active, so very robust connectivity. Everything is redundant with ExpressRoute. So where VPN is a single router on the customer premise up to an active-passive gateway in Azure. So that is a single point of failure. With ExpressRoute, everything is redundant. So if you order a single ExpressRoute circuit, you don't really see it, but under the covers, there's an A and a B side that will fail over and actually run active-active if everything is up and running. So definitely ExpressRoute is the enterprise-grade option and allows that higher throughput. So for an overview of hybrid connectivity, that's it for today. Stay tuned to future episodes where we'll go into this in much more detail. Again, my name is John Orman for Azure Networking, and thank you very much for your time.